Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future. They are providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're introducing new author Sandra Shaw Homer. We're going to talk about her book, about writing, about what inspired her. But this is a recorded show, so please don't call in. Here's Sandra.
Hi, Sandra. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. It's nice to be with you.
It's nice to have you with us. Your new writer, this is your first book. What inspired you to start writing?
Well, I've written since I was 9 years old. So, I mean, this is something that's ongoing in my life. I've done a lot of writing for professional reasons, working in public relations and marketing And I really was determined when I moved to Costa Rica to start writing for myself. So I started writing short stories, and I wrote a book that didn't go anywhere. And since then, I've done some travel, and I've written a couple of travel memoirs, and they've been published. They're available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And this book was going to be something different. It was going to be a more personal book. And tied into where I am, which is just one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And
you were saying that you started writing as a child. What inspired you when you were a child? Was there an author that you liked, or parents or poetry for because of what you sing around you? How did it start?
That's an interesting question, because I think my mother read to us all the time when we were kids. And I loved books. I loved being read to. I loved learning how to read and be able to read on my own. And I don't know, the world of written words was just always fascinating to me, and I thought, well, why don't I do that? It was a little brazen of me, perhaps, but it was, children don't know about that. So I just I wrote my first autobiography at the age of 9. it was only two pages long.
Well, you were only 9.
That's right.
How much can you have lived by that time?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I always look. There's sometimes you read about people and they have always been like adventurous. Like, I like to read about like authors I really like, like Agatha Christie and Louisa May Alcott and Dorothy Parker. People that I like to get backgrounds, and it was just because I guess Little Women's coming out yet again. I was reading about her background, and from a little girl, she was always writing. Her dad was a teacher, but that wasn't why. It was just that she was just an inveterate writer from inception, practically. Were you always scribbling?
Yeah. From the time I learned how to make letters, I just was interested in putting words together. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's in the genes, or maybe I think it has a lot to do with people reading to you when you're a child, because you opened up to a whole new world. Some of it's fantasy, some of it's fairy tales, some of it's more educational, but still, that was another world, and I wanted to go in it.
That is one of the things I think is really tells you the difference between someone who likes to read and someone who likes to read and write. Is that mm-hmm. you want to be in it. You want to find a way into whatever the creative fantasy that you're interested in. I used to walk home from school when I was about 8 or 9 by myself, because I was always a new kid. And so in order to entertain myself on the block and a half home, I would take a TV show I really liked, and I created an entire thing for myself, where I was a part of the TV show, and I had a very active fantasy thing where I just create this entire world just to entertain myself until I get home. I mean, I knew the difference between reality and fantasy, but it was more like I need something I even do that to put myself to sleep sometimes. I tell myself a story just to get to sleep. Do you have that kind of thing?
Exactly. I did the same kind of thing. It's called an active imagination.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any psychosis involved there, but it's you just love to imagine things. I would make up stories at night before going to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, just this weird thing. And anything could set me off. My dad was a great story. He used to read us. Well, both my parents used to read, but my dad used to do it in all the voices and stuff. He had a great voice. So
That's wonderful.
So my brother and I are both readers. So I really think that's true. And I think that my love of stories came from both my parents in different ways. My dad because of books, and my mom because of the old movies she introduced us to. And I kind of am a mish of both. Do you have anything like that?
What did she introduce you to? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Classic movies, like Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn and Holiday.
Oh,
and
God, yes. Of course, my mother did too. She loved those things. And I was growing up in an era when television was playing a lot of those old movies in the late afternoons,
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
When I came home from school, my mom would say, okay, put your books aside, come here and sit with me and watch The Thin Man or My Man Godfrey or
I think parents who help to stimulate their children's imaginations are doing them a great favor.
Oh yeah,
really, for the rest of their lives.
And it gives you I also had this thirst to know. So I was the kid who always asked why, or if I didn't like the ending, I would make up an ending because I didn't like the way a story or a TV show or a book or whatever ended. That's not good enough, and I would make up. I would go on with a story in my head so I could at least have an ending I could live with.
Right, and there were some stories you just didn't want to end, so you just kept them going.
Yes, when I first saw the never-ending story, I thought it was written for me, even though I was an adult. Because I could really understand that kid.
But
it's just one of those strange things. Imagination, love of stories. I think it's really still important today. It breaks my heart when I hear people say, and proudly, I don't read, I don't watch television, I don't do anything like that. And I said, so what do you do for fun? And they're like, oh, nothing much. I go out with my friends and I do gaming. And I'm like, I mean, I guess there's a little imagination in gaming, but really that's like sort of mindless to me. And I don't understand, there's no real creativity. There's creativity for the people creating the games. That's a lot of creativity. But for the people who are playing them, I just don't understand.
I feel like I'm wasting brain cells if I do stuff like that. And I don't. I don't have television where I live. So I have, even though I have a smart TV, I suppose I could get Netflix, but I haven't got it wired up to the, or hooked up to the Wi-Fi I have. So what I do is watch old movies. And I've watched many of them many times. But mostly I read. I have a Kindle with me all the time. And if I have to wait somewhere for a while, you know, I'll read. Or I'll just sit down in the afternoon and read for a couple of hours. It's just, that's important, you know.
I'm a little weirder than you. I have a paperback book in my purse wherever I go.
Yep. Good idea.
I go to laundromat, book. I go wait in line at the bank, book. I have Kindle. I have it on my cell phone and my desktop, but just, I don't know. I just like books. I like real books. I like to hold them. I like the smell of them. I like the feel of them. There's just something special about books, and a contraption, as much as I enjoy it, and I enjoy contraptions as much as anybody else, it's not the same to me. There's not that comfort.
I understand that perfectly, and I used to have a lot of books, but I have arthritis in my hands, and so it's difficult for me sometimes to hold on to especially a heavy hardback novel or something. So the Kindle has been a great benefit, and also when I travel, which I do quite a bit of, the Kindle, of course, replaces 17 different books I might have to put in my suitcase.
Yeah, well, that I understand. That's a totally different thing. I'm just saying, you know, for pleasure, I like to have a book, a real book. But I understand,
yeah,
if you have arthritis.
I agree with you. They're wonderful, but I've been giving them away, because I just, although there's some that I just couldn't possibly part with, you know, I'm older now, and a lot of them I'm not going to reread, so I, as much as I love them, just the fact of them and holding them and smelling them, you're right. Although in Costa Rica, I have to say, they get a little moldy, so the smell of the book isn't...
Because you're in the tropics, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We're just 10 degrees north of the equator, so yeah, it's tropical.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I don't know. It's like, did you ever see the movie The Time Machine with Rod Taylor?
No. Back to the Future, I think, is what I'm thinking of. Yeah, no, I didn't see The Time Machine.
Oh,
or if I did, that
God.
Was a long, long time
it's
ago.
It's a beautiful movie, and Rod Taylor is gorgeous, if you like, you know. If you like a handsome man, Rod Taylor is really there. Anyway, in the movie, Rod Taylor's character, the time traveler, George, they call him in the movie, even though I don't think if I remember right, H.G. Wells just called him the time traveler in the book. He goes, when he's in the future, he is trying to find out what happened to the civilization, and he asks for them to bring him to the books. And one of the men bring him to the books, and when he pulls it aside, the books are falling apart. In fact, when he puts his hand up to touch one of the books, it just crumbles in his hand. And then he just takes his hand and he pushes it through all the books. There's no substance to them because nobody has looked at them for centuries.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that that's what I worry about with civilization
sometimes,
sad. Because it just breaks my heart.
My sister was just complaining about this the other day. She, you know, her children were certainly raised with the same kind of reading and encouragement to read and so on that we got when we were growing up, but her kids read mostly online. They don't read books.
I mean, it's okay to read online. It depends on what they're reading. You know what I mean?
I agree.
A fan fiction is fine as long as it's nice stories, especially if they're young, like a Harry Potter fan fiction or something that's sweet. But there's some bad stuff that's online that I you
too
know
much,
yeah that's stuff that you. But I mean, kids when my age get a hold of books that I shouldn't be getting a hold of. Just by going to the library, because I wasn't monitored when I went to the library. I mean, I was a teenager, so you were allowed to go to the adult section. You didn't have to stay in the children's section or anything. And I could get any book I wanted. So I got all kinds of books I shouldn't have probably have gotten. I got The Carpetbaggers at 15. Which wasn't appropriate, and when my mother saw it, I had already finished it, she flipped out.
I think I recall reading Lady Chatterley's Lover underneath the covers with a flashlight. and of course I got caught. Yeah.
Oh. No, I didn't. I think I read Lady Terribly Deliberate in college, so that wasn't a big deal because I was an adult. But when you're a teenager, you know, yeah, you're more curious. Oh, what was the other one? Tom Jones was another one. I got halfway through that when I was about 10, and my dad just said, because it's all about sex. I mean, that's what the whole book's about, practically. And I was 10. I didn't even know what sex was. Not when I grew up. I mean, it's not like today. So my dad was like, what are you doing? I go, reading a book.
He says, all innocence.
Yes. He says, you can finish this when you're 16. And he took it and back to the library. Because they used to have mobile libraries they used to go around, too. And I think that's where I got it. Even though the ladies that ran it were supposed to monitor you, they were handling 20 kids that were all around the trailer that you go in and out of like a car trailer, that like a van, minivan. And so they were handling like 20 kids that were coming in and out of the thing. So and adults, there were kids and adults and all this, and it's like one or two little ladies, and they couldn't monitor you.
Of course not. Yeah.
So I could get. I mean, I think my brother got some stuff too that he really shouldn't have gotten, and he was 4 years younger than me, and he was getting kind of graphic books. But when you're a teenager, you test the waters so far, you know.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, nothing's off limits when you're a child. I mean, you just you don't know that there are limits until somebody tells you.
And it's not like it was marked not for children.
Mhm.
It was in the adult section, but it wasn't marked as this book is full of sex, or this book is full of violence, or this is a horror book. Well, the horror book is marked, but it's not. This is graphic horror book, you know. None of that was marked.
Right.
So, yeah. Like you said, it was all innocent. But the world's different. Now a kid can pick up their cell phone and they can pull up something, and it can be really give them nightmares for, like, ever, and really be scary for them, and not good.
No. No, there's just too much bad stuff online. There's a lot of talk about that now, about somehow controlling access to certain sites.
But there's still parents control.
I'm for keeping it open. I think that the free speech aspect of it is really important. But I agree, it's scary that the stuff that's there. And I guess the only thing you can do if you have kids is try to explain to them that what's real is not conspiracy theories, flat earth stuff, and I mean, I just, you can go on and on and on with the crazy stuff that's out there.
Oh, God, but, yes. I mean,
but to ground the ground
flat
them in reality
society.
As much as you can.
The flat earth society actually makes me laugh, but, I mean, I know there are people who really believe that, but, oh, my God.
Yeah. Scary.
I know. But, I mean, there are parental controls on the kids' cells, so they could control that for the kid. I mean, up until a certain age, I would say 15 or 16, they should be able to pick what they want. But
yeah, I agree.
But before that, you should be able to, you can have parental control. I mean, my mom had no problem coming in my room and looking at what I had on my desktop. Not my, like, computer desktop, but my actual top of my desk.
Right.
She never read my diary, but she had no problem with looking at what books I had and stuff like that.
It was nice that you didn't read your diary. No. I always had to hide mine.
They also bought me diary with a key on it, so, I mean, they really did have respect for me.
That's nice. That's good.
But then
That's
I had I have a brother who figured out how to pick it.
I'm sure they're not the most secure locks in the world.
They're not. They're really... back then, they used to have these diaries that had these little locks in the middle. And he just used... He used to take, my mother's eyebrow... What do you call it? The thing to pluck your eyebrows.
Oh, sure. Tweezers.
Tweezers. And he used to use that to open it.
Probably could have done it with a
bobby
paper
pin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So they're not that secure, but yeah, it's really funny. We're getting to the part where you get to tell about your book. So it's open for you.
As I mentioned. Go ahead.
No, it's all open for you. Go ahead.
Thank you. No, this was for me the most important book that I've written. Previous ones I think I mentioned were travel memoirs, and I have a lot of fun writing those because I enjoy travel a lot, and I enjoy the people that I run into, and I enjoy the funny things that I encounter. And but this was kind of a love song to Costa Rica. I've lived there for almost 30 years, and I wanted to observe closely the wonders of the natural world around me. Costa Rica is the most biodiverse country in the world because it's a land bridge between two continents. And so they guess that 25% of the biodiversity in Costa Rica hasn't even been discovered yet.
Wow.
It's just that rich.
It's amazing.
So, I mean, rich in insect life, in animal life, in plant life, flowers and trees and things that just don't exist elsewhere on the planet. And I wanted to get to know those better. And so that's why the book is called The Memoir of a Naturalist in Costa Rica. I'm not a scientist, but I am a backyard naturalist. And so I got started just wanting to observe and be able to describe the things that I was seeing. And at the same time, some memories were coming up about my childhood and my whole life in Costa Rica, and it began to turn into a memoir. And then Avelio came along. Avelio's Garden is the title of the book, and Avelio had worked with my husband in construction and helped to build our house, and he wanted to put an organic garden in an empty spot on our farm, and we said fine. But he's one of these people that needs constant attention and constant pep talks. And the weather was really bad that year. The wind came at the wrong time. The rain came at the wrong time. You know, he lost some crops, and he kept making the garden bigger and bigger. And it was just he really kind of took over the story. So the story is a weaving together of my observations of the natural world, and I learned a lot from him too, because he grew up, of course, in what we call the campo, in the countryside. It's interesting to me to observe the culture there, the rural culture in Costa Rica, because it really is still very much based in the farming culture that existed less than 100 years ago. It's like they've moved from the 19th to the 21st century without anything in between. And it's so there's still a very vivid memory of, and when I say vivid, I mean actively physical memories of how you thresh the beans and how you hull the rice and how you make a special knife to harvest the rice. And all of these skills are still very, very much alive in rural Costa Rica, and it was fascinating to discover them and to write about them. So the book is rich in all kinds of ways. There's some funny stuff, of course, because two cultures clashing, mine and his. Of course, I have to get over it because I'm living there, you know, so his culture has to win. It was just, I had a lot of fun writing it, and it was also a chance to look back at my life. I'm 73 years old now, and kind of try to put some perspective on events that had taken place over all those years. And so I think it works. Several people who've read it already have told me that it works very well, that it's beautiful, in fact. So I'm delighted.
That's great. I was just thinking, you said before that you wrote your memoir at 9, so it was 2 pages, so now your memoir would be a bit longer.
Yes. Yes, Sherry, the book is quite a bit longer than 2 pages. It runs to 265, and there's some interesting back matter in the book, a list of flora and fauna, a wonderful bird list. My sister is an avid birder, and every time she came to Costa Rica to visit, she would be standing out there in the forest fields with her binoculars, like a statue, you know, trying to notch up new species. So it's quite an extensive list, and people interested in the natural world would find some of those things very interesting. So, you know, it's a book for a lot of different kinds of people. It's a story. It's a story of two cultures coming together. It's a story of what Costa Rica was like 100 years ago. And it's my personal story, so I hope that it has some success.
So, how is it available? Is it on Amazon? Is it through? Is it in the mortar and brick stores? How is it available?
Okay, right now it's available on Amazon, both as a paperback and a Kindle, and it's also available on BarnesandNoble.com, both as a paperback, and they have an e-book called a Nook Book, and it's also available at Powell's.com, which is the largest bookstore in the States, I think, in Portland, Oregon. So far, it hasn't made it into any bookstores, any brick-and-mortar stores, but we're working on that. That should happen fairly soon. So it's been published as of December 1st, and it's getting out there.
Cool. And have you gotten any response yet?
Yes. Well, I had a pretty good Kirkus review, but right now we're in the process of just sending it out for reviews since it's just been published. I have a publicist working on it, and she's sending it out for interviews and reviews, and this is actually my first, Sherry, so I appreciate it.
Aww, I'm your first.
Yes. So I appreciate your interest. I'm very grateful for your interest in it and your desire to share a half an hour over coffee with me.
Oh, no problem. I actually really love talking to new authors. It's one of my favorite things. The reason why I started chatting with Sherry was because I had a hard time with my first book to even get an interview with anybody. And even with podcasts, and podcasting was new, but people would they'd have me fill out paperwork and then not get back to me and all this really weird stuff. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And so I actually now I'm hooked up with 3 or 4 other people who also do podcasts. So when I do a book, have a book come out myself, I go up to other podcasts too. But I started it to make it easier for newbies like yourself.
Well, that's a very kind thing to do. I appreciate it. Yeah. It takes work to promote yourself and your book, and sometimes it's very hard for a creative person to do that.
It's actually harder than writing the book.
Absolutely, no question. I can sit there and write all day long, but to try to call somebody up and say, "Hey, would you like to interview me?" You know, that's a little harder.
And it sounds so kind of pathetic sometimes when you're doing it. I mean, at least that's how I felt myself. Hi, I have a new book, and you don't know me from Adam, but would you please interview me?
Yeah, no, it's rough. It is rough. And there's tremendous competition out there for the attention of book reviewers and interviewers. Just incredible. So it's hard to get, you know, wedge your book in there for a little attention. So
yeah,
but
and
thank you.
It's just one of the interesting things too, is because when you talk to people who are new authors, they come from all different backgrounds, and they have all different experiences, like yourself. So I learn something every time myself. So that's something that people don't understand. Interviews are a two-way street. I'm not just barking questions at you. I'm listening to what you're saying.
No, you're fun to talk with, Sherry. Thank you. I've enjoyed this very much.
You're welcome. Do you have any events coming up, or do you want to say any where your website is so people can?
Oh yeah, I have a blog site. I haven't yet put up a site for the book, although there is a Facebook page for it. You can find it under the name Avelia's Garden. And I do some updates there, as well as I've done some a little bit of reading and recording, so you can listen to my voice reading parts of the book. My website is writingfromtheheart.net, and it's actually a blog site, and I have had it for a number of years now, and I focus on writing, on living in Costa Rica, on some philosophical things. So right now, it's the latest blog is the book is launched. Hallelujah! and plus an excerpt from the Kirkus Review, but we'll be getting more reviews, and I'll be posting them on the website as well as on the Facebook page. So
that's terrific. I mean, and I'm really happy to help you, and I wish you the best of luck.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did, very much. Take care.
Thank you, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.